Lowry triggers a three.
Ibaka with a rebound over to Lowry now. Here's Lowry. Three, good. Kicks it. DeRozan launches long two. Scoops it up. Powell to Lowry. Lowry! OG to the trailing Ibaka, and it's good. Crowd appreciative of the effort tonight by the Toronto Raptors.
How important is it at a time like this to make sure everybody remains optimistic?
Very important. Playing as many games as I have, you know, knowing the ups and downs, you know, other teams have gone through and will go through what we're going through right now. We can't hang our heads. Nobody's going to feel sorry for us. So we're going to get back to work, figure some stuff out, and get some wins. I thought we played hard, you know, at times. I thought the ball was moving at times. It's not for really lack of effort. We haven't executed game plans at certain points of the game, but we just haven't had seen shots drop. It's tough offensively, obviously, when shots don't go in.
This concept that at least one baseball executive thinks is a good idea, that you should reconfigure the lineup in the ninth inning of a game that you're losing top three batters, whoever the manager wants. The concept was, you know, Brady, LeBron, Sidney Crosby, well, they're not sitting on the sidelines of their respective sports. I did go back to this executive and say exactly what you said. One of the more compelling arguments against is that Buck 79 hitter doesn't get a chance anymore, maybe in a big spot. And the response I got back there was, yeah, well, maybe so, but, you know, what about the stats we always hear? Team is 99-1 when leading after eight innings. Concerned about people snapping the television sets off.
I think the NCAA is concerned with the number one thing that keeps it running, and that is the NCAA tournament and the revenue attached to it. I don't think anybody can trust the NCAA to move forward and create a better product, a more thorough product that maybe don't have some of these issues. It feels like we need an outside group to come in and fix what the NCAA can. You got these people who are saying, just open up everything, pay players, let agents pay players. Well, you know, that should create its own problems.
I think the NCAA is so overwhelmed, and maybe it's a little bit of conspiracy theorist in me, but I think they want the tournament to go off as well as possible in this environment, and I think most fans want it to go off as well as possible. I think they want to hold on until the Masters, and then they can deal with this.
I don't understand why, as an industry, basketball or any other professional sport, that we're able to artificially limit somebody's ability to make money. I don't get it. I mean, you can get out of high school, you can turn 18 anyway, let's say, and go to work anywhere else. I mean, an 18-year-old, if he's talented enough, can come into your profession and get a job. I think personally, Bucks, I think that the people that were against them coming out made a lot of excuses, but I think a lot of it was racist, quite honestly. And the reason I'm going to say that is I've never heard anybody go up in arms about, oh my God, they're letting these kids come out and go play minor league baseball, or they're letting these kids come out and go play minor league hockey. They're not making big money, and they're white kids primarily, and nobody has a problem. But all of a sudden now, you've got a black kid that wants to come out of high school and make millions. That's a bad decision. But bypassing college to go play for $800 a month in minor league baseball, that's a fine decision? What the hell is going on?
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
I wonder how many times a day Stan Van Sloppy says, what the hell is going on, like that. I mean, honestly, it's probably very, very frequent. Probably when he looks at his checkbook and has to balance it. What the hell is going on? Certainly every time there's a timeout and he looks at a whiteboard. What the hell is going on? As he watches his team at practice. What the hell is going on? How many times do you think Stan Van Sloppy says that? Stan Van Gundy also said in that opening montage that you just heard, the head coach of your, not mine, your Detroit Pistons, also said in that little montage that you just heard that he doesn't know what's going on. He doesn't know how something can happen. You could fill Little Caesars Arena not once, not twice, but probably thrice, with all of the things that Stan Van Sloppy doesn't know. Have you had just about enough of the coach of the underachieving, epically failing Detroit Pistons yet? You tell me. You're a Pistons fan. This team continues to get worked on a nightly basis. This team is in the middle of a horrifically weak conference, and it can't even get into playoff positioning. and its coach spends more time talking about politics and social issues with the NCAA than he does about fixing his broken-ass team. And that's what it is. The Pistons are a broken-ass team. They have now lost 6 of their last 7 games after a modest 5-game winning streak that followed a 7-game lose. No, I'm sorry. Was it 8 or 7, Jim? I always mistake that. 2, 4, 6, 8. An 8-game losing streak. So if I were to put all those together, help me out here, Jim. Do the math. That's 8 losses, 5 wins, 6 losses, 1 win. That's 14 losses and 6 wins, so that means they have lost 14 out of their last 20 games. Did I do that right?
That sounds about right.
I
did
it right.
I mean, let me break out the calculator, but that sounded right.
Yeah, we'll go with it. We'll go with it. I'm going to go with the calculator in my head. Stan Van Gundy spends more time talking about things other than winning basketball games, and I, for one, if I'm a Pistons fan, have had just about enough. An absolutely epically embarrassing performance last night by Stan Van Sloppy's Pistons. 123-94 at Toronto. Now, are the Raptors pretty good? Yes. Are they much better than the Pistons? Yes. But are the Pistons supposed to be losing by 30? Are the Pistons supposed to be losing 14 out of 20? They made a trade for one of the best players in the NBA. It looked for a little while like that might be a big lift. Not so much anymore. Maybe Stan Van Sloppy doesn't know how to use him because he's busy commenting on social matters rather than drawing up basketball plays. Blake Griffin only took 12 shots against the Raps, made 4 of them. Had 12 points and a single rebound. Andre Drummond still did Andre Drummond because he is immune to Stan Van Gundy. You don't need plays for Andre Drummond. You need shots to go up and rebounds to be pulled down by Andre Drummond. He will do it himself. He'll get him 18 boards, 6 on the offensive end, get him some putbacks, and have him an 18-18 night. But for everybody else, you need a game plan. You need a rotation, you need a sense of chemistry, and you get none of the above from Stan Van Sloppy. I would like to know when this guy is going to be held to account for one of the most underperforming teams in the NBA this season. Kush, is that an extreme statement? I want you to look. I'm going to pull up the standings right now. Have a look at them with me, Jim Cushlin. And you look at all of the teams in the Eastern Conference, where they stand. Look at the Washington Wizards and what they were expected to be this season. Look at the Indiana Pacers. Look at the Bucks. Look at the Sixers. Look at the Heat. Those are your playoff teams thus far. Then there's Pistons, Hornets, Knicks, Bulls, Nets, Magic, and Hawks. And that's just in the East. Let's stay there for a second. Of all of the teams that are outside the playoff window looking in, did any of them have reasonable expectations of being a playoff team this year? Or did they expect to suck? I would submit to you, before you answer, Jim Cushlin, that the Hornets, the Knicks, the Bulls, after trading away Jimmy Butler, the Nets, the Magic, and the Hawks all knew it was going to be a season of suckitude. Maybe even the Miami Heat didn't expect to be where they are now. The Detroit Pistons were supposed to be a playoff team. And the way they started the season, people like you, Jim Cushlin, made this mistake 2 years ago, too. A year ago. Thought maybe not only a playoff team, but especially, you know, in the midseason, and then also when Blake Griffin was acquired, that maybe this team could push up. That little 5-game winning streak had people talking about what? Maybe a first-round home advantage. Maybe in the top 4. Maybe in the 4-5 series, they'll be the 4. Not guaranteed, of course, but this is what was the expectation.
Right.
This team is 28-32. 3 games out of the 8th spot. Has anybody else, Jim Cushlin, in your opinion, underachieved as much? Well, I mean, I've got an answer to my own question, but I'll let you answer first. I just thought of a team that may be underachieving more than the Pistons, but I'll let you answer first. Can you think of anybody else who has underachieved more than Stan Van Sloppy's Pistons this year?
Maybe the Cavs on some level, but
you stole it, you son of a bee. You were supposed to look for all the bad teams.
I knew you were going there when you were like, oh wait, I got another team. But no,
because they're supposed to walk to the Eastern Conference Championship, and of course they had to be blown up because they were underachieving.
Right.
So, but it's a different kind of underachieving when you're still third in the conference and still going to go to the playoffs.
Exactly. And all the teams below them are quite frankly out of it and have been out of it for a long time. And actually, I would argue maybe the fan base and some of their own front offices thought the Hornets and Knicks, you know, those Knicks fans, thought they would be better. I laughed at that when that came out. I know some Knicks fans probably did.
Oh.
Be that as it may, the problem for the Pistons, above and beyond them not playing well, four games under 500, three games now out of that final playoff spot, closer to the Hornets than they are to the playoffs, is that those teams like the Heat, the Sixers, the Bucks, the Pacers that you had mentioned, that's your 5-8 at this moment, all separated by just three games,
yes,
are starting to solidify themselves as the bottom portion of the East. In essence, you can already scratch everybody from the Hornets on down is out, and the Pistons right now are kind of hanging on for dear life because they are not playing well at the exact same time that Miami, Philly, and Milwaukee are all playing a little bit better, and that's why you have this separation starting to happen. And it can't get much farther than that because, you know, it's March in 2 days.
Fair. I think that's fair to say. I disagree with you. When Melo left the Knicks and they knew they were starting over again and they got rid of Phil Jackson, they're in a building mode, and they had no illusions of playoffs this year. I don't think so at all. Maybe some Hornets fans might have, but again, based on what? Based on what history and what success and what lineup? No, maybe the fans did, but no. Overall, I'm talking about NBA analysts.
Okay.
Not
that
just
part's
fans
true,
of a team.
Yes.
If you're an analyst of the NBA and you have no rooting interest, did anybody expect those teams to make the playoffs? And I would say no. The Pistons, I would have said yes. And the fact that they're not indicates what an underachieving job Stan Van Sloppy is doing. Now, I will look, however, at the Western Conference and say I do see some other contenders for this award for underachieving a team of the season. One of them would be the team looking in the Pistons spot in the ninth slot in the West on the way out looking in, although they're only a game back instead of 3.5 back, and that would be the Clippers. But even they have managed to right their ship. Rather than being, you know, getting worse as the season has gone on, as the Pistons have done, they started out impossibly badly after losing Chris Paul, as we know, and of course, after the Blake Griffin trade, you know, a lot of people thought they would go into the tank. Well, they've won 7 of their last 10. You could say the Clippers should be in the playoffs, and they're in the ninth spot now, so that would be underachieving. Maybe. Below them, though, Jazz, Lakers, Mavericks, Grizzlies, Kings, and Suns, some of them are flat awful. Some of them are comers and on the build, but they know it's not this year, like the Lakers. They're on the build. They're going to be really building in the offseason when they have two max player contracts available in terms of the salary cap. I might point to the Thunder as well because they got off to a slow start with their new three-headed monster of Westbrook, George, and Melo. But, you know, they have also come on. And they have beaten the Warriors down twice before getting beaten down once. So I don't even know if I'd call them underachieving. Just slower developing, maybe. I could make a legitimate case if I was on a debate stage and being judged, I could make a legitimate argument that the Pistons are the single most underachieving team of the season, and I want to know when Pistons fans are going to say we've had enough. Stan Van Ball doesn't work, and Stan Van Ball seems to be less concerned with his team than he does with scoring political points, making social commentary, talking about racism in basketball because of the one-and-done rule, which is something else that is absolutely patently absurd that I want to address. Kush, should Pistons fans start to get the long knives out and go for Stan Van Gundy? Talk to Pistons management and say, you know what? This isn't working. This guy, quite frankly, in my opinion, has always been overrated. Always. You know, he was the coach of that Miami team for the first part of the season, the last championship team, until it started to go off the rails, and Pat Riley rescued it and said, you know what, I'm going to take it from here. And Pat Riley coached it to a championship. He never got where he wanted to go with the Magic. And since he was designated the savior of Detroit, I'd like to know where we are in year 4. This year 4, right?
Yep.
Where are we in year 4?
behind schedule.
Is Detroit anywhere? Thank you, Jim. Great answer. I was going to say, are they anywhere near where they are supposed to be on the building a championship scale, on the building a champion timeline? Are the Pistons getting closer to it or further from it? And I agree with you. They are most certainly behind schedule on getting where they want to be. And that's even with the addition of Blake Griffin. And if I'm a Pistons fan, I'm saying just about enough. Thoughts?
My first thought is that, and I've even started to allude to this in recent days myself, said a little bit about this yesterday because that's the second loss, you know, in a row. The Pistons were also looked pretty terrible on Sunday too, in that, yes, those questions must be asked, thought of seriously, and not just poo-pooed to the side if this team does not make the playoffs. At least just make the playoffs, which right now, as we just alluded to, not looking good at all, especially with those other teams in the East, you know, playing decent basketball to create a little separation. I mean, this, we've said it on this show, especially post Blake Griffin trade. This team has to make the playoffs. Now, that's what I think should happen. Unfortunately, Bob, what I still think will happen, and this is just my gut instinct theory.
I got you.
Is that because of that trade, for better or worse, he will be back in this position next season, which is the last of his current contract in this position with Detroit. I don't know if that's the right decision or the wrong one.
Right.
That's just what my gut tells me what
I
will still happen.
Your gut is right, and your gut is prodigious. It's usually not wrong. So
my gut's usually wrong. That's why I tell people never go bet on the game on my game picks. Never, ever do that.
I was referring to what made it prodigious. It's never wrong about what it wants you to fill it with.
Oh, you meant that.
I think you're right. And I think it's a mistake. I think it's going to delay the development and the fix for this franchise a lot more than perhaps a lot of Pistons fans realize. I really do. I think they're making a big mistake. Now, having said that, I want to also talk about his nonstop idiocy. He's got diarrhea of the mouth. He will not stop talking, no matter how insane he sounds, no matter how dumb he sounds, no matter how ridiculous he tries to play social justice cards when he's supposed to be talking about his underachieving, poor-performing basketball team. Stan Van Gundy and Jim, I know you played a lot of it. By the way, thanks for sitting in yesterday. I'm sure my voice still doesn't.
No, happy to. We're glad to have you off the broadcaster's disabled list, as I've been referring to it.
Well, it really is. And, it's 2 weeks now that I've been fighting the effects of this cold, and they continue to manifest themselves on my vocal cords and make it very hard to speak with laryngitis. So it's still not back 100%, but at least you can hear me today. Yesterday, you couldn't have heard me. Anyway, you played yesterday a little bit of Stan Van Gundy talking about how bad the NCAA is. Heard a little bit yesterday about how it's the worst organization ever and how it exploits athletes and so on and so forth. And he started that diatribe, and I don't know if I have the right clip here, Jim. I'd like you to hear the part where he talked yesterday about one and done. So you can get that ready for me. But he talked about how the one and done rule that prevents players from coming straight out of high school into the NBA is malicious in its implementation because of its of racism. That it was intentionally done to hold young black basketball players back from making their millions of dollars right out of high school. That the NCAA doesn't care about young black kids. They do care about young white kids because he said, what did he say? You can go into the minor leagues and play baseball right out of high school. You can go into minor league hockey and play, but there's a majority of white people there. But you can do it in basketball, so it must be an anti-black thing because it's a majority black sport in the sport of basketball. Do you have that ready for me, Jim?
I don't understand why, as an industry, basketball or any other professional sport, that we're able to artificially limit somebody's ability to make money. I don't get it. I mean, you can get out of high school. You can turn 18 anyway.
Of course, you don't get it. You're an idiot.
And go work anywhere else. I mean, an 18-year-old, if he's talented enough, can come into your profession and get a job. So I think,
there he goes again, trying to think. Stan Van Sloppy needs to stop thinking. The man is a walking moron. And sadly, for all of us, he's a talking moron. Has anybody explained to this halfwit that it is not an NCAA rule Do you think he knows this, Kush? Do you think anybody pulled Sloppy aside and said, yo, Slop, you keep saying that the one-and-done rule is racist because they don't like black kids making millions of dollars. Did you know, Slop, that this is not an NCAA decision? This is an NBA rule. Now, why does that matter so much? What is the NBA? The NBA is 85% black. NBA owners give hundreds of millions of dollars at a time away to black people. How can you call the one-and-done rule, which is an NBA rule, a racist rule, by claiming that they don't want to give black people millions of dollars? What in the living hell are you smoking or snorting or shooting up there in the D, Stan Van Sloppy? The NBA is black. 85-90%. That percentage has gone down a little bit in recent years because of the influx of European players. But still, 85, maybe 80, I don't know. Would anybody describe the National Basketball Association, an organization made up of 29 member teams whose owners routinely give out hundreds of millions of dollars to black people to play basketball for them, a racist organization? When they found out that one of their guys was hiding racist feelings, talking about Donald Sterling, right? One of their members in the owners' club was not openly racist, but was a closet racist that was hiding racist feelings, and he had to be wiretapped by some blonde bimbo in order for that to be exposed. And when they found out that he was a closet racist, somebody who hid that, they made him sell his team. And Stan Van Sloppy is going to say the NBA is racist because of the one-and-done rule? Does he have any earthly idea what he's going to say before it comes out of his mouth? He went on to talk about, and maybe play the rest of this, Jim, as he talks about how minor league baseball and hockey players can come right out of high school and go to work. Go ahead and play the rest of that.
I think that the people that were against them coming out made a lot of excuses, but I think a lot of it was racist, quite honestly. And the reason I'm going to say that is I've never heard anybody go up in arms about, oh my God, they're letting these kids come out and go play minor league baseball, or they're letting these kids come out and go play minor league hockey.
Stop.
They're not making...
Stop. Again, the slopster doesn't stop to think for 1 second before the next syllable comes out. Why do you think nobody's up in arms about a high school kid coming out and going to play minor league baseball? Why do you think that is, Slop? Because it's minor league baseball. He's going to learn to hit professional pitching, or as a pitcher, to strike out professional batters at a minor league level. He's not going straight to Yankee Stadium. 18-year-old kid standing in against Corey Kluber or Justin Verlander. If they did, what would people say? People would scream, what the hell are they doing? They can't let these 18-year-old kids come up here and play professional at the highest level of the world. They're not ready. It makes a mockery of the game. Oh, sure, you might have one or two that come along in a lifetime that are just prodigies that can do some things. But by and large, these guys got to get ready. You need to get them at bats. You need to get them innings and pitch counts at a lower level. Let them work their way up to this level. And the best place to do that is in the minor leagues. You don't see a difference between that and throwing Kwame Brown into the NBA as a Washington Wizard or as a Los Angeles Laker? You don't think there's a difference between putting somebody out there in the Tigers farm system, having them work their way up to Toledo to play with their hands at fifth third before taking on the best in the world? That's the right way to do it. And since there is no minor league basketball system that is the equal of that, they say do it in college. At least get a year of higher level competition, because you're not ready coming out of high school. With the extraordinarily rare exception of the LeBron James of the world, who came right out of high school. The Kobe Bryant, who, by the way, did not take the NBA storm the way LeBron James did out of high school. Even he would have benefited from a year or two of college. Same thing with Dwight Howard. With the extraordinarily rare exceptions of some of those individuals like that, high school kids aren't ready for the NBA. Let me ask the slopster this. What percentage of the NFL is African American? It's not 80 or 85 the way it is in the NBA, but it's probably close. 70, 75%? Pretty good guess. Maybe 30% white or other. They don't let players come in out of high school either. How come you didn't mention them, slop? Why did you only mention baseball and hockey? Because you wanted to turn this into a racial discussion instead of a performance discussion. Because you know damned well that the NFL couldn't let 18-year-old kids come up, because they'd get killed. It's a physical, violent game. They're not physically ready for it. How come you're not saying the NFL is racist for not letting 18-year-old kids come out and make millions in the league? Why do they make them sit? Not one. It's not one and done in the NFL or in college, in the college game, because of the NFL, is it, Kush? It's three and done. Minimum. The NFL says you can't come into our league and play our sport until 3 years after your high school graduating class, whether you graduated from it or not. Now, if you want to sit by the ocean for 3 years and then apply for the draft, fine. But chances are you're going to want to continue to play and get better for those 3 years, so you're going to go to the college game. Isn't that racist, slop? How come you're fighting for the 18-year-old black kid in basketball but not the 18-year-old black kid in football? You turned your attention to baseball and hockey, which are not 85 or 80 or 70% black. So your transparent virtue signaling on race is about as embarrassing as your appearance and as your basketball team. Stan Van Sloppy should be embarrassed by that team. He should also be embarrassed by the idiotic nonsense that comes out of his mouth. The NBA is a black league. They pay black stars handsomely to play the game. They're not trying to keep young 18-year-old black kids down by not letting them come into the league immediately because they're racist. Get a clue, shut the hell up, try to turn your playoff-caliber basketball team into something other than an NBA laughingstock. Kush, let's get wild.
ESPN 106.5 The Ticket presents The Wild Stat of the Day, brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings. Wings, beer, sports.
Buffalo Wild Wings Wild Stat of the Day. Anthony Davis is having himself a time. My goodness gracious, what are we going to do? AD, the unibrow, went off again last night. Pelicans 125-116 went over the Suns. His line, 53, 18, and 5 blocks. What? Anthony Davis is now officially, according to the NBA record books, only the second player in history, following Bob McAdoo, to ever have games that included 50 points, 15 or more rebounds, and 5 or more block shots. That, of course, is only since blocks began to be tracked in 1973, 1974. Had we wanted to go further and be really wild, somebody could have dug up every game line of Wilt Chamberlain and probably found, I don't know, a dozen or more 50 points, 15 rebounds, and 5 block shot games in the Stilts career, but probably not Bill Russell, because Russell wasn't a scorer. He didn't do the 50-point thing. Wilt did. He averaged 50 a season, averaged 26 rebounds in a season, and yes, probably average more than 5 blocks in a season. That was probably easy to do, but they didn't start tracking it. Why the hell not? I don't know. Until 73, 74. Oh, by the way, one more wildness, piece of wildness on this. This was also Anthony Davis's fifth 40-plus point game in the month of February. That's the most in any calendar month in the past 35 years. AD is a beast. That's your Buffalo Wild Wings Wild Stat of the Day. We're back after this.
Be part of the extravaganza right now by calling 866-240-1065. Now back to the Bob France extravaganza on 1065 The Ticket.
Yes, indeed, 345. Rolling along on ESPN 1065 The Ticket. Hey, Kush!
Yes?
Did I see, like, a stack of hockey tickets sitting over there on your console?
You did. Oh, you did.
What are you doing? Are you selling them? Are you scalping?
Well, I probably should, but somehow I don't think the proverbial upstairs here would be happy about that.
Kush on the black market outside. Outside the arena. I got two for the Stingrays. I got two for Walleye Stingrays. Let's go. I can already see you doing that. I don't know why, but I can see that being a side job for you. a little ancillary source of income for Kush. But obviously, no. Excuse me. I will try not to make you have to do the show again today, Kush. I'm trying to fight through this anyway. No, I do have tickets, or you have tickets anyway, Jim Kushlin. As long as you're not selling them, let's give them away. I got a pair of tickets to the Walleye game on Friday at 7:15 against South Carolina, the Stingrays. So Walleye, Stingray. Walleye, Stingray. Kush, I got to go Stingrays on this. Not on the
team. In terms
teams.
Of sea creatures for yeah. names of your team?
Yeah, yeah. Not well, the walleye really aren't a sea creature. They're a lake creature.
True. But in the water.
But if they're in the water and there's a fight, I'm going with the dude that's got the stinger thing and the big long pike on the tail. Probably over the walleye. What are you thinking?
In terms of in their natural environments, yes. In terms of on the ice, I'd go the other way because unless I'm missing something, walleye still at the top of their division and still atop the Western Conference.
So in liquid water, stingrays trump walleye.
Yes.
But on frozen water, now it's walleye time.
Yes, I like basically.
It. I like it. That's better. All right, they're playing on frozen water on Friday at 7:15. You want to go? I got tickets for you. 866-240-1065. Caller 4. Caller number 4 right now. Bother Kushlin. Get him all bothered as he tries to run my show and play clips for me while he's answering phone calls because we can't get an intern in here to answer phones. Come on, Kushlin. Get some help. And you could go to the Walleye game on Friday night at 7:15. What better way to spend a Friday? Oh, and you know what? That's perfect, too, if you're Catholic, too. You got to spend Friday with fish, don't you? You can't have any meat on Friday, so you might as well go ahead and watch the Walleye and the Stingrays on Friday night. That just makes perfect sense. It's a fish fry of a different kind. Okay, enough silliness. I want to know if you agree with me at 866-240-1065. Stan Van Gundy says that the NCAA is racist, that the one-and-done rule is racist. He neglects to state or mention, in fact, I doubt very seriously that he knows, whether or not he knows, that the one-and-done rule is actually an NBA rule. Do you think the NBA is anybody? Raise your hand right now if you think the NBA is racist. An organization that's 88-85% black, and they're all multimillionaires, racist. Anybody think that? And if so, if so, tell me why. And if not, tell me if you agree with Stan Van Gundy, or that Stan Van Gundy pretty much needs to shut up.
As an industry, basketball or any other professional sport, that we're able to artificially limit somebody's ability to make money. I don't get it. I mean, you can get out of high school, you can turn 18 anyway, let's say, and go to work anywhere else. I mean, an 18-year-old, if he's talented enough, can come into your profession and get a job. I think...
You want to know the difference there, Stan? Yet another one, you walking tub of goo. The problem is, in your comparison, he's talking to the media there, if you're a great writer or a great reporter or a great broadcaster, yes, you can do that at 18 because you are not going up head-to-head against somebody trying to stop you from broadcasting, writing, or speaking, or whatever. There are newspapers and radio stations and television stations all over the world. Yes, of course anybody who is 18 can walk out of their high school and go get a job in this industry. See, they're not having their stuff swatted back in their face by Andre Drummond. Nobody is trying to write while being hounded and harassed by a great defender. Nobody is getting dunked on when they go into this industry and they come out of school in this industry. It's sports. It's sports, Stan Van Sloppy. There are people who are trying to stop you from succeeding in it. When you have competition, it's a little bit different than comparing it to other lines of work. Just saying.
Personally, Bucks, I think that the people that were against them coming out made a lot of excuses, but I think a lot of it was racist, quite honestly. And the reason I'm going to say that is I've never heard anybody go up in arms about, oh, my God, they're letting these kids come out and go play minor league baseball, or they're letting these kids come out and go play minor league hockey.
You don't think people would be up in arms if they put an 18-year-old kid on the mound facing Aaron Judge and Giancarlo Stanton? You don't think people would be like, what are you doing? You can't put him there. Get him into college and let him play the game there and learn. Get him into the minor leagues and let him learn. They're going into the minor leagues, Slop. They're not going into Major League Baseball. More. If I could stand there.
Not making big money, and they're white kids primarily, and nobody has a problem. But all of a sudden now, you've got a black kid that wants to come out of high school and make millions. That's a bad decision.
It's the NBA's rule. Are you calling them racist, you walking, talking piece of lint? Are you listening to yourself, Stan?
Bypassing college to go play for $800 a month in minor league baseball, that's a fine decision?
Correct, because that's how you learn to get better at the sport that you want to make millions at later.
What the hell is going on?
Yeah, that's what you ask every single time out when your team is losing by 20. Stan Van Sloppy, I want to know how you feel about him, 866-240-1065. And by the way, if you don't even want to talk about his ridiculous, nonsensical statements, how about just his performance as the head coach? Now, after saying that, Kush, I want to be an equal opportunity destroyer, as
okay.
I usually am.
All right.
I'm going to slam a little bit of Tyronn Lue once again here. What the hell is going on with the Cavaliers? The Cavaliers brain trust, by way of Kobe Altman and Dan Gilbert, gave Tyronn Lue a new roster to work with. It was going great guns for two games before the All-Star break, beat Boston handily, beat the Thunder handily. Come out of the All-Star break, and suddenly it's get worked by everybody. They've lost two out of three, and a couple of times have not been competitive. Suddenly it's back to the question of, does Tyronn Lue now know how to work rotations? Does he know how to use the pieces he is given? Or is it a little too early to ask that? The only reason I'm saying it's not Kush. And by the way, who's that? Ken? Ken Savinsky? Did I get it right?
Yes,
Ken?
You did. Good job.
Ken Savinsky. You're the man, Ken. Congrats. Ken Savinsky of Toledo wants to spend a Lenten Friday with the fish, as we all should, if you're Catholic.
Oh, you know, I see what you did there.
You see what I did there? The walleye and the stingrays. It's a Lenten Friday night. What the heck? Notice because we're talking about Lent, I said heck instead of hell. See, I'm trying to get myself into a better place. We do have more of those tickets, by the way. So congratulations to Ken. He won a pair of those tickets for Friday's walleye game, I should say. We've got more, and I'll give some of those away a little bit later in the next hour. But, Chris, the only reason I'm saying it's not too early to criticize him, to be quite frank, about this is because he really did not know how to work the rotation with the last group. Now, you can say, well, part of that is because that rotation was filled with complainers and, you know, non-team-oriented guys. And I think of Isaiah Thomas in that vein, and I think of maybe Jay Crowder to a lesser extent in that vein. Dwayne Wade more interested in palling around with LeBron than being a team leader, so he goes into that vein. So maybe it's part of their fault, which is why they ran them, right? That's why they got all of them out of the way and brought in four younger, more aggressive defensive players. But if you have the old group and you don't know how to use them, remember, Jim, how many games was Channing Frye sat down?
Too many.
I mean, you know,
too many during the worst stretches.
Same thing we talked about before. Jose Calderon and Channing Frye were major components of what was a 19-game winning streak or 18-game winning streak?
It was actually only a 14, but they won like six
or
in a row
18
after.
Out of 19 or
yeah,
something.
It was 18
okay.
out of 19, exactly.
Right, whatever it was. When they were playing the best basketball they were playing of the season, right?
Yep.
Channing Frye was a big part of it, and Jose Calderon was a big part of it. Isaiah Thomas comes back. Jose Calderon never sees the floor. Channing Frye, for whatever reason, is glued to the end of the bench as the 12th man. Everybody's getting an opportunity. Chetty Osmond is getting opportunities. Kyle Korver is getting opportunities. I mean, just about everybody. And Channing Frye can't get off the bench. He was poor at finding the right rotations under the old group, with the old group, and now he is proving to be poor in the early going with finding the right rotations with this group. And Jim, he doesn't even have to fit Kevin Love in yet. He can't find the right combinations to score and stop, which is the name of the game, with the group he's got. Wait till the all-star Kevin Love comes back. How is he going to figure out who to give the minutes to and who to sit out? I don't know that Ty Lue is, quite frankly, a championship-caliber coach. And I say that knowing full well that he was the coach when they won the title 2 years ago. But I think it was more in spite of him, or more due to the players on the court who led like LeBron and Kyrie, than because of him. And now that he's got to coach this and figure this out, Jim, I don't know if the Cavaliers have an elite championship-level coach. So while I'm sitting here ripping Stan Van Sloppy for being an idiot and an underachieving coach, I want to be fair and say, Ty Lue, come on. Right now, he's got a lot to prove, in my estimation, if he's going to be the long-term coach of this team. Whether LeBron stays or not, and especially if he does stay, and all of this young talent which is here, which is going to be locked up for long-term, if he's going to be the long-term coach of this team, I need to see something a hell of a lot better in the second half of the season. Or technically, we have what, Jim, a quarter of the season left, around 20 games?
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
I need to see a hell of a lot more from him in terms of rotation and how to handle these guys for the next 20 games before I would be committed, if I'm Dan Gilbert and Kobe Altman, into saying this is who we ride with as we try to win championships in the remaining years of LeBron James' career.
Yeah, and first of all, on the Ty Lue aspect of it and his long-term prospects as the Cavs head coach, I got convinced a long time ago that he's only the coach as long as LeBron's here because of that whole dynamic. If LeBron leaves, expect Ty Lue to be fired soon after that. That'd be my guess anyway, because you'd want to start fresh again.
Yes.
But in the here and now, you know, yes, you're going to have to figure out these rotations and stick with them and figure out who plays best, you know, in what role. The flip side, there's only one thing that happened in these last 2 years, particularly the San Antonio game, that's hard to blame on the coach. And I kind of mentioned this also a little bit yesterday when I briefly hit this subject.
What's that?
Look, the Cavs defense is still bad and will continue to be bad. That's also what, therefore.
But why? Hold on. Why? Are they a bunch of bad defenders?
Previously, before
the trade, I would have said yes to that. I don't say that now. These guys are young enough. I don't think they are coached well enough on defense.
I don't disagree with that.
Put another way, and not to do this again, but, you know, we have to. Ty Lue replaced the fired David Blatt, who was a very good defensive coach. If David Blatt was still coaching his team, and I'm not saying he should be because, you know, some players didn't like him, and whatever the case was. And they got their title the next year. But David Blatt coaches this team, I promise you it's a better defensive team, no matter who those players are.
Oh, yes, and there's definitely something, you know, on the head coach on this subject. The other side, though, is this defense has been horrid since, like, the beginning of last year, and for us to expect it to suddenly change, I think is naive at this point. Okay. So what I'm also saying is, in addition to the things Ty has to do, in the San Antonio game specifically, with a team that plays bad defense, we see what happens when they're not making shots. They can't outscore anybody, even if it's half a team, because, you know, Kawhi's not there and whatnot.
So what you're saying is, and I think it's fair, is that there isn't a cohesive offense that he can run either. It's a jump-shooting team. If they're not making outside shots, if I'm hearing you correctly, and I think I am, and I think you're right, if they're not making jump shots, they lose.
Yeah,
if they're
basically
just not on, they lose because they don't have a consistent enough offensive game plan to get to the rack and score inside, other than LeBron just forcing his will upon people and embarrassing people and powering through people.
Yeah, and the occasional.
And going around people from time to time.
Or the occasional lob to Tristan Thompson.
Yeah,
that's about
right.
The extent of their game in
but
the paint.
But they don't have, a dedicated game in which they can use the inside part of the lane to make it a consistent scoring threat, unless it's just drive and then kick and hope for the three.
Heck, we've been saying they should use that Kevin Love for that for a couple of years now, and no one seems to want to listen to that because it's still not being done.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, that's an interesting point. And so, in other words, what we've said is, you know, he's not a good, again, kind of looking to the head coach, and this is LeBron's guy. It's why David Blatt was fired and LeBron got his guy. He isn't a good defensive coach, and he doesn't have much of an offensive game plan either.
Yeah.
It's, we have to hope that our shooters are on. When we're making 14 or more for three-pointers a game, we're golden. If we're not, we're screwed.
Right.
That's problematic to me.
That's my assessment of it, but that's not to say Ty Lue is blameless. He's got to still figure out all the rotations and the other things of how to put this still basically brand new team together. That part's still on him.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. All right, good stuff, really good stuff. I want to talk more coming up in the next hour about the NBA and about some of these things. As a matter of fact, DetroitBadBoys.com writer David Fernandez joins us at about 4:30 to talk more about the underachieving Pistons, who have lost four in a row, and what did I say, 14 out of their last 20. 14 out of their last 20 under Stan Van Sloppy. So David Fernandez joins us at 4:40. But coming up at 4:10, we do the college basketball thing. UM writer for MLive.com, Andrew Kahn, will join us. Talk about Michigan, their late season run, their Big Ten tournament coming up, and yes, the NCAA scandal. There was a suggestion by former Wolverine, Kush, Jalen Rose, that the players boycott the NCAA tournament over what they perceive to be, and he perceives to be, mistreatment by the NCAA. Eric Dickerson, by the way, former SMU star, says the NCAA is akin to slavery. Interesting. We'll talk about that with Andrew Kahn as well, but for now, let me ask you this. Do you need a new roof? $1 down. Need new siding? $1 down. New windows? Just $1 down. Get a new look. Your choice of roof, siding, or windows for just $1 down. That's the power of 7 years interest-free. You don't need a big down payment. Interest-free for 7 years. Are you kidding me? Think about when that is. By my count, that's 2025 before you pay a nickel of interest and just $1 down. Call WeatherSeal today. Don't delay. Get the roof, siding, and windows you've always wanted for $1 down. The number's 877-WINDOWS. Call WeatherSeal today at 877-WINDOWS or check them out online at weathersealhomeservices.com. Back after this.
Lowry triggers a three.
Ibaka with a rebound over to Lowry now. Here's Lowry, three, good, kicks it, DeRozan launches, long two, scoops it up, Powell to Lowry, Lowry, OG to the trailing Ibaka, and it's good, crowd appreciative of the effort tonight by the Toronto Raptors.
How important is it at a time like this to make sure everybody remains optimistic?
Very important. Playing as many games as I have, you know, knowing the ups and downs, you know, other teams have gone through and will go through what we're going through right now. Can't hang our heads and we're going to feel sorry for us. So we're going to get back to work, figure some stuff out, and get some wins. Well, we played hard, you know, at times. I thought the ball was moving at times. It's not for really lack of effort. We haven't executed game plans at certain points of the game, but we just haven't had seen shots drop. It's tough offensively, obviously, when shots don't go in.
This concept that at least one baseball executive thinks is a good idea, that you should reconfigure the lineup in the ninth inning of a game that you're losing top three batters, whoever the manager wants. The concept was, you know, Brady, LeBron, Sidney Crosby, well, they're not sitting on the sidelines of their respective sports. I did go back to this executive and say exactly what you said. One of the more compelling arguments against is that Buck 79 hitter doesn't get a chance anymore, maybe in a big spot. And the response I got back there was, yeah, well, maybe so, but, you know, what about the stats we always hear, team is 99-1 when leading after eight innings. They're concerned about people snapping the television sets off.
I don't understand why, as an industry, basketball or any other professional sport, that we're able to artificially limit somebody's ability to make money. I don't get it. I mean, you can get out of high school, you can turn 18 anyway, let's say, and go to work anywhere else. I mean, an 18-year-old, if he's talented enough, can come into your profession and get a job. I think personally, Bucks, I think that the people that were against them coming out made a lot of excuses, but I think a lot of it was racist, quite honestly. And the reason I'm going to say that is I've never heard anybody go up in arms about, oh my God, they're letting these kids come out and go play minor league baseball, or they're letting these kids come out and go play minor league hockey. They're not making big money, and they're white kids primarily, and nobody has a problem. But all of a sudden now, you've got a black kid that wants to come out of high school and make millions. That's a bad decision. But bypassing college to go play for $800 a month in minor league baseball, that's a fine decision? What the hell is going on?
I think the NCAA is concerned with the number one thing that keeps it running, and that is the NCAA tournament and the revenue attached to it. I don't think anybody can trust the NCAA to move forward and create a better product, a more thorough product that maybe you don't have some of these issues. It feels like we need an outside group to come in and fix what the NCAA can. You got these people are saying just open up everything, pay players, let agents pay players. Well, you know, that could create its own problems.
I think the NCAA is so overwhelmed, and maybe it's a little bit of conspiracy theorist in me, but I think they want the tournament to go off as well as possible in this environment, and I think most fans want it to go off as well as possible. I think they want to hold on until the Masters, and then they can deal with this.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Yes, indeed. Rolling right along at 12 minutes after 4 o'clock on the Extravaganza. Thanks for being with us. I promised you walleye tickets before the end of the last hour. And I guess I probably went back on that promise, only because I ran out of time. How about I hook you up right now? Again, spend your Lenten Friday with the fish, as you should. Walleye and stingrays, to be precise. On Friday night at 7:15, caller number 5 this time, caller number 5 right now, ring Cush's phone, jingle his bell, and tell him you want the tickets to the walleye and stingrays, and I got a pair for you for this Friday at 7:15. All right, we're going to go back from hockey, though, to basketball once again, talk about not only the Big Ten tournament, but maybe the NCAA tournament, and whether or not there will be one. If a former Michigan star has his way, there won't even be one. What am I talking about? Well, let's bring on Andrew Kahn and we'll explain. Andrew Kahn is a UM writer for MLive.com. Andrew, thanks for the time. I know you got a press conference or somewhere to be. We won't keep you too long. How are you, sir?
I am good. Thanks. Yeah, we're going to be meeting with Coach Beilein and some players to talk about the aforementioned Big Ten tournament.
Well, let's talk about the run that the Wolverines are on. Coach Beilein's team is doing some things here in the late going. A 5-game winning streak to wrap up the regular schedule. You got the Big Ten tournament about to begin at the end of the week, and you can't really do much better than that. Wisconsin, Iowa, OSU, which was huge because the Buckeyes were 8 at the time, then Penn State and Maryland in some big-time impressive wins. No real close games in that winning streak. They really kind of are peaking at the right time, are they not?
They absolutely are. It's starting to look a little bit like last season. You know, this year the defense has been much better than last year, and honestly in John Beilein's entire tenure here at Michigan. But the offense had been lagging behind. That has not been the case over this win streak. They have found their groove. Muhammad Ali Abdulrahman, their starting shooting guard, has really come on lately. He's hitting a lot of he's really creating for himself and for others. I mean, he's playing very much like their point guard Derek Walton Jr. was at the end of last year. And I don't know if you remember how critical he was to their Turk postseason success. So, that's really been the key, you know, to their run lately. Like you said, those were some big wins in there. The Ohio State one was, you know, the biggest as far as it was a rivalry game and, you know, senior day for Michigan. But to go on the road after that, and pick up 2 wins to close the season, honestly, was just as impressive, if not more so, to me.
What do you see when you look at this Big Ten tournament then, Andrew? Because, you know, obviously Michigan State is at the top of the conference. Purdue was there for quite a while in the season, but Michigan State is a game better than Purdue and Ohio State. Michigan checks in 4th at 13-5, tied the same record with Nebraska. So is Sparty, because they are on top, are they the favorite in this tournament? Or is it maybe the hottest team like Michigan? They might be the hottest team that could be the team that comes out of this thing and wins it.
Yeah, I mean, Michigan State is on quite a win streak as well, let's not forget.
Okay.
Now, as far as the conference standings, you know, I wouldn't buy into those too much as far as just going down the line and assuming that that's the true order of these teams because of the unbalanced Big Ten schedule. I mean, they all played their 18 conference games, but they weren't against the same teams. And, you know, Michigan State, for example, only had to play Ohio State, Purdue, Michigan, and even Nebraska, you know, all the teams directly below them once each, as opposed to, you know, Michigan, who had to play Ohio State twice and Purdue twice. And, you know, we can go down the line and compare these things, but the bottom line is the schedule did make a difference. So to answer your question, you know, I saw Michigan State is the, you know, Vegas betting favorite, and that's certainly fair. They're the one seed for a reason. You know, they certainly have, I'd say, the most talent, at least, you know, NBA-wise in the conference. And they're playing well right now. But after that, there's no reason Michigan couldn't be that, you know, second team that could challenge them. Now, they'd have to meet, you know, early there. They're on the same side of the bracket. So it'd be, you know, it'd be in the semis there. But yeah, Michigan, is playing as well as anyone. And of course, you mentioned Purdue and Ohio State. They can certainly win this thing as well. all the coaches, I'm sure, today they'll be talking about it. And once we get to New York, how wide open this thing is, because that's what coaches like to do. But I think, you know, the winner is going to come from that group we just mentioned.
Yeah, we're talking with Andrew Kahn of MLive.com, who writes about the Wolverines, and we're going to talk more about the NCAA tournament in a second. But just real quick on Michigan State, you're right. I mean, obviously, what is their win streak, 10 or 11? So I probably should give them the, you know, the first look here. But I want to know, do you think that this scandal, expose, FBI investigation, et cetera, that did indeed include Michigan State, is going to be a distraction of any kind? Now, as I understand it, Miles Bridges apparently paid his $40, is cleared of an NCAA violation. Is that the only part that they were implicated in? Are they fully in the clear now? Is this something they can just, you know, where Coach Izzo can say it's full on basketball, we don't have any of that, anything to do with the rest of that stuff?
Yeah, I mean, we do have a Michigan State beat writer, Kyle Austin at MLive.com, and I would certainly urge your listeners to read him, because he does a great job. I'm really focused on Michigan, but obviously I know what's going on. Coach Izzo was on a conference call yesterday, and I think if he wasn't asked that direct question, it came up in one of his answers, and you know, he's felt like no, not necessarily, because of the win streak, they continue to prove that at least it hasn't been a hindrance, but has it been still a distraction and adversity that they've had to overcome, even if much of it was self-inflicted? Yes, because he said that as well. And going to New York, of course, it's only going to intensify. You got a lot of national media that hasn't had the chance to talk to him, and they're going to be all over him there. So it'll be interesting how it all holds up under the bright lights.
I like you giving your fellow writer a plug, by the way. Jim Cushlin had him on yesterday, as Jim said, and for me yesterday. So we talked to Kyle Austin yesterday about that. I just wondered about whether or not you think that will be a distraction from the front runner, if you will, in the tournament that might give another team a little in. But they've been dealing with this all along, and obviously they do have that winning streak. Which takes me to the question just about the tournament overall and the state of the NCAA. Everybody with a voice and a microphone now seems to be attacking the NCAA as being exploitative of student-athletes. It's a horrible organization. Let me just run down some of them. Eric Dickerson, legendary SMU running back, says the NCAA really is slavery. That's pretty doggone strong. Stan Van Gundy, I call him Stan Van Sloppy, says it's the worst run organization in all of sports. Jalen Rose, former Wolverine, since you write about Michigan, has suggested that the players should make their stand now and not participate in the NCAA tournament, which of course would cost Lord knows how many, probably billions, when you consider all of the TV dollars that would be in jeopardy and all of the money to the to the schools, sponsors. It's such a multifaceted thing, of course, when you run this tournament. But he is saying this is how you get your power back. What do you think of the idea, Andrew, that somebody would say, let's take a stand as players now and not play?
That's an interesting question. We certainly been discussed in the past. I know there was all that talk about a team that was going to, you know, get to the NCAA tournament or even the Final Four and not take the court, you know, delay the game by a little bit. I think even the Fab Five had something to do with that, perhaps, here at Michigan. But it never came to fruition. The system has a lot of problems. We mentioned Miles Bridges and Michigan State's, issues, so much of it is just hard to regulate. I mean, if a kid is doing nothing wrong, but a parent or a, you know, aunt or uncle is, how do you stop that? How do you enforce that? It's very tricky. It'll be something to watch, especially with this dark cloud looming over this year's NCAA tournament. Who knows exactly how it will play out.
Are you an advocate, Andrew? And we'll ask Mike this last question because I know you got to run to that press conference. Are you an advocate for paying student athletes at the NCAA level?
If it can be done the right way, I'm not smart enough and haven't devoted enough time to figure out exactly how it can be done. But that's of course the tricky part. But I so an advocate might be too strong of a word, but I'm not against it. Let's put put it that way.
Okay, and you know what? I think that's very well argued, too, because I've yet to hear anybody who is an advocate of paying them figure out how to do it right, which is what you said.
Sure.
And then that's a lot of discussion that needs to be had. All right, hey, thanks for squeezing us into the conversation, Andrew. I'll let you toddle on off to the press conference here. Thanks very much for the time. We'll catch up maybe during the Big Ten tournament.
Sounds good. Thanks again.
Thank you so much. AndrewConhamLive.com. Joining us to discuss the Wolverines' run. They are really in a good place right now as they head into the tournament on a five-game winning streak. Can't really say the same thing for Ohio State. Buckeyes are 15-3. They are tied for the second-best record in the Big Ten, but they have lost two of their last four. They lost to Penn State and Michigan back-to-back, as we know, before taking care of Rutgers and Indiana. To wrap up their regular season schedule. So.
Yeah, and I would say, and I mentioned this with we mentioned this briefly yesterday. Of course, it was Monday, so we had Paul Keels on that Buckeye side of things. Honestly, the thing that I don't like most about the Buckeyes in this Big Ten tournament is it looks like they're going to probably get Penn State, unless Northwestern pulls an upset. They're going to get Penn State in their first game on Friday, and we know what Penn State's done to them this year.
Yeah, then, okay, that's not the team that you want to be playing. There's no question about it. That is not who you want to be playing. So, and I'm glad. Sorry, I missed the Paul Keels conversation yesterday. Obviously, I always enjoy that talking with the voice of the Buckeyes. Okay, I want to open this up as a general topic of conversation. Now, first of all, congrats to Mike Baughn. Yes, Baughn?
Yep.
Mike of Delta won the latest walleye tickets for Lenten Friday hockey. And they against the Stingrays, so it's all fish. It's all sea/water dwellers, but they'll be on the frozen water this time around. So you've got Jalen Rose questioning whether they should even play the doggone thing. You've got Eric Dickerson calling it slavery, talking about the NCAA. You've got LeBron James, by the way, Cushion. I don't know if you heard this. LeBron James calling the NCAA corrupt. In the wake of the scandals, blaming the NCAA, not necessarily the agent that is responsible for a lot of this, not necessarily the student athletes who are taking money, but the NCAA as an institution or an organization. Let's see if we can hear LeBron James.
I'm not a fan of the NCAA. I love watching March Madness. I think that's incredible. I'm not a fan of how the kids don't benefit from none of this. So it's kind of a fine line because I actually got a couple boys that could be headed in that direction. So there's going to be some decisions that we as a family have to make. But I know as the NBA, we have to figure out a way that we can shore up our farm league. And if kids feel like they don't want to be a part of that NCAA program thing, then we have something here for them to be able to jump back on and not have to worry about going overseas all the time, I guess. So we have to figure that out. But kids getting paid is not something, man. That's not new. Nothing new under the sun. I mean, you guys seen Blue Chips? It's a real movie. It's a real movie. Seriously, it's a real movie.
So LeBron James referencing what I talked about on the show on Friday, Kush. Chips from 19. What did we decide?
94.
Yeah. Glad to hear LeBron referencing the same movie because he's right. And then what I said on Friday was right. It is real. This happens. And what Nick Nolte's character said in his climactic speech in front of the media as he had his meltdown when he quit. He said these kids. He said right now there's a 10-year-old kid somewhere in America dunking already. He's all the way above the rim already at 10. And he holds our future employment in his hands. Because if we don't get him, we lose to him, to whoever does get him, and then we get fired, and then somebody else comes in. So we have to find a way to get him, and that means we might have to pay him. LeBron James just said the kids are getting paid. Did you see Blue Chips? It's real. He's right. It is real. The question is what to do about it. Now, he called the NCAA corrupt. He's right about that, too. Does that mean, though, that it's the institution that is being corrupt for the sake of corruption? Or is it just that the fight for dollars and winning leads to dollars makes individuals do corrupt things? I would submit that the NCAA as a model is not corrupt. I would absolutely object to Eric Dickerson, who disrespectfully said that the NCAA is like slavery. The man is speaking out his arse. Stop comparing anything that you don't like, to bondage. And it really, really rubs me the wrong way when I hear people doing that, especially people who are of color. You know, you are disrespecting the ancestors of so many people who endured slavery. Don't tell me a kid who goes to school, gets all of his gear and clothes paid for, gets all of his tuition paid for, gets his books supplied to him, gets his meals free, gets his medical care free. Don't tell me that's like a slave. Slavery's endured horrific suffering and had no freedom. That's what slaves endured. College athletes are not slaves. They are getting paid. Whether you want to acknowledge the fact that somebody who goes to school and gets his degree that can earn him thousands, if not millions of dollars in his career, who doesn't have to pay for it for the rest of his life by the way of student loans, if you don't think that's getting paid, then you've got a problem understanding economics. All right? But don't say things like that, Eric Dickerson. It's not fair. It's not right. It's insulting to people of color, and as a person of color, you should know that better than most. Now, having said that, the NCAA might not have to be the only alternative for young athletes before they are allowed by age to go pro. We know, because of the Stan Van Sloppy comments, that there is minor league hockey. There is minor league baseball. There is no minor league football. But there could be minor league basketball, and that goes back now to LeBron James. You heard what he said. Maybe we need to find a way to expand the G League and turn it into an actual minor league basketball system where young players who don't want to go to college and maybe European players can come over in their teenage years and in their young 20s even, and teams... And teams are affiliated with, obviously, every team would have their own minor league affiliate team, would put these guys out there on, you know, against one another. And that way you can take a young kid at 18 right out of high school, and you don't have to put him in the middle of Staples Center or in the middle of Little Caesars Arena or Quicken Loans Arena and put him against the best players in the world. They can develop and play. You know, Jim, a place for the Ball brothers, who are right now toiling in Lithuania, yeah, to play here at home. Maybe we can talk about a minor league system, because the other sports do it. Why doesn't basketball do it?
Yeah.
And that way a player can be drafted and not be forced into the rotation, but also, you know, and especially when you draft him early in the first round, you know, you want to play him and get a return,
sure,
on your investment.
Yeah.
But you know what? He's not ready. So what do? Do I let him sit there? Or do I get him out on the floor against other young guys,
yeah,
and then decide when to call him up and send him down the way they do in baseball?
Yeah, and, you know, there's a lot to unpack, you know, with that part, because thinking about the quote-unquote basketball minor league system. First of all, basketball is in the situation that it is because everybody, consciously or subconsciously, defaulted to college basketball as the quote-unquote minor league system for all these years. Incidentally, as you were playing that clip of LeBron and he was mentioning the players overseas in the G League, the first thing that I thought of was, hey, let me check something out. So I went to the little G League site just now. First thing I discovered, that therefore to rectify that, there's 30 teams in the NBA, right, Bob?
Yes, sir.
There's only 26 G League teams. By my quick looking, New Orleans, Washington, Portland, Denver does not have any affiliation. So first thing that has to happen is four new teams in the G League so that each team would have an actual affiliate.
Absolutely.
First and foremost, if you're going to do it right. Because it used to be...
But if I may, Jim, help me out here, because I'm not 100% certain on the workings of the G League. You don't... Your rights aren't owned by a particular NBA franchise, right? If somebody playing for the Canton Charge... gets an offer from the Denver Nuggets to go play for them, he can do that, right?
You know what?
I don't think these guys are beholden to a franchise the way they are in baseball, where somebody plays for the Mudhens belongs to the Detroit Tigers.
You know, that's such a good question, and I've honest to goodness never looked into that to, you know, confirm or deny exactly that. That's something to absolutely look into. My initial thoughts were to be maybe not, and I say that because, you know, Chidi Osman on the Cavs right now, well, he was technically in Turkey the last 2 or 3 years, right? The Cavs still all that time owned his quote-unquote draft rights. So maybe that's part of it. But that's actually a great question. I don't know the answer to that.
Yeah, I think maybe if somebody knows, they can call us at 866-240-1065 and tell us if you follow. I mean, you know, name a player in the G League, can you?
No, it's hard to. And obviously, if you get four more teams so that each team has one, I can figure out hopefully this contract thing. Then the next thing you have to do is, because remember, right now they have a situation where each team is allowed two-way contracts. In other words, two players that they could bring up from the G League and then, in baseball terminology, option them back to the G League. They can't really do that with anybody else, on the roster. And circling all this back around, and we've talked so many times, you and I, and as well as so many others, on the whole, one and done rule thing. That, they should eliminate it. If you want to come out of high school and maybe you get into a revamped G League, that's something different. But if you go to school, you got to play for 2 or 3 years like the baseball thing. We've talked about that so many times. It's why, to me, Stan Van's comments that you've been talking about last hour are the most idiotic, because you don't even have to go to that well to explain how the one and done is wrong and has been messing up both sides of basketball. We've all been acknowledging it for years before you even have to go to that ludicrous angle.
Here's the thing, though, Jim. Back to the point about what LeBron said about expanding the G League and growing the G League and making it truly a minor league system,
mm-hmm.
Where every team or where every player on the team is belongs, the rights belong to a particular team. Excuse me. What I said a moment ago when I inadvertently just kind of stumbled onto something, I said, can you even name a player on the G League? Because we don't follow very much. You don't know one kid, do you?
No.
Neither do I.
Honestly, I don't.
Because of that, Jim, think about this. Because of that, if the G League really was a thing and it was a minor league system the way we're talking about here, and you have a choice, go to college and play for Mike Krzyzewski and play on national television where everybody does know my damn name, and I'm going to the NBA and I'm going to be a force in a year or two, or playing in the G League, which will not be on national TV any more than the Mud Hens are, or Clippers are, or whoever, not LA of course, but the Columbus Clippers,
right?
Or the Akron Arrows or whatever the hell, or they're the Rubber Ducks now, I guess, aren't they?
Oh, yeah, that's right.
They are. You get the point
yes,
here.
Yes.
You're toiling away in anonymity in a G League or in a minor league system, and nobody knows you. Or if I just go to class a little while and don't take any extra money, I can go play for John Calipari, or I can go play for whoever, Chris Holdman at Ohio State, and I can be a name, and I'll be on TV all the time. I mean, these kids don't want to toil in anonymity for a few bucks. They would probably rather go to school, and I don't think that the G League would be the answer. More of them would probably rather go to school and play for the fame and adulation that comes with maybe winning a national championship.
And that last part you said is why basketball has this quote-unquote minor league problem, because they've just defaulted that all these decades to the college game.
In the same way the NFL has with the college.
Correct.
But that's the right thing, of course, because you can't
for
run.
Football, yeah.
You can't
for
run
football,
minor
yes.
League, minor league football.
Yeah, I agree with that. Sadly, keeping it at the college level for football, is the correct thing. But on the basketball side, you got the international players. You got the possible high school guys that might come out if they were allowed to. There's other factors there that aren't exactly on the football side of things that have been cropping up more and more as time has gone on the basketball side, that they need to find some way, as LeBron was alluding to revamp the G League to make it a more, true minor league type of option. And there's a couple ways that I think they could do that. I mentioned the first one. You got to at least have 30 teams. There's only 26 right now.
Yeah,
so each team can have an affiliation. That has to happen before anything else can happen.
And it won't happen until they actually figure out what the reason for that happening would be. And that is the way to run it, to where you would actually have players assigned to a certain team and players who would want to come there and toil there and learn the game at 18 and 19 before they are called up, if you will, the way baseball does. Stan Van Sloppy so quick to criticize in his comparison of basketball to baseball. Well, guess what? The 18 and 19-year-olds toil in anonymity in the farm system, literally playing in fields near farms. That's why they call it that, for crying out loud. Before they get up to the big show. And if the basketball player is willing to do that, fine. Then we'll let them come pro at 18. But if the only option is the NBA right now, that's obviously...
I found something that this doesn't fully explain it.
What's that?
But I'm on the G League's website trying to find the contract information type stuff we were just asking about. The closest thing I could find under the heading returning players... It says here, teams hold the rights to any player who has played for them within the last two seasons as long as they have not released that player.
All right. That's interesting. So there's
it still doesn't seem to be the full explanation, but right now, skimming their site, that's the closest thing I've been able to come up with.
Yeah. Well, that's what we need to figure out, what the real rules are, and then most importantly, what the rules should be if something like this was going to work. And that's obviously a long conversation, one we don't have time for right now because it's 4:36, and I got to get a quick timeout here about any of our local sports centers. We can come back and talk Pistons basketball. Stan Van Sloppy and the boys absolutely failing right now. They're having a terrible run. They've lost 14 out of 20. They're not tracking to make the playoffs. What are they going to do? David Fernandez, who covers the Pistons for DetroitBadBoys.com, will join us. And hey, Kush, frozen water one more time. You got the third pair, don't you?
I do indeed.
Let's give that third pair of Walleye Stingray tickets for this Friday night, a Lenten Friday with the fish at 7:15. Let's give them to caller number three this time for the three periods and then what we hope will be a three-period game. Well, then again, overtime hockey is kind of cool. Anyway, caller 3 at 866-240-1065. Your tickets, a pair of them, are waiting for you. We're back after this.
Now, back to Bob France, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
How important is it at a time like this to make sure everybody remains optimistic?
Very important. Playing as many games as I have, you know, knowing the ups and downs, you know, other teams have gone through and will go through what we're going through right now. We can't hang our heads. Nobody's going to feel sorry for us. So we're going to get back to work, figure some stuff out, and get some wins.
Well, he's part right. You can't hang your head because nobody's going to feel sorry for you, but you ought to hang your heads in shame. Pistons just playing shamefully bad basketball. Stan Van Sloppy coaching shamefully bad basketball. This is really, really getting to be, I don't want to say, well, 20 games to go roughly, about a quarter of the season left, having lost four in a row and now 14 of their last 20, pretty damn close, in my opinion, to panic time. Joining us now to talk about Pistons basketball and Stan Van's lack of commitment to it, in my opinion, is David Fernandez. He writes about all things Pistons for DetroitBadBoys.com, and he talks about all things Pistons on his Pistons podcast, Inside the Cylinder. David, good to talk to you again, my man. How are you?
Hey, you know, I've been better on that front, but other than that, things are going well.
How's the podcast going?
I guess it's going well. You know, we're, you know, always getting some new listeners in there, so that's kind of the goal. So, you know, even with times being tough, people still tune in.
Well, give it a plug. Where do people find it? Just right on the website? Is it on Detroit Bad Boys, or is it in a different page?
So we are on almightyballer.com. That's the network that we're a part of. And then also iTunes, Stitcher, Podcast Addict, you know, wherever anybody, where you'll find podcasts, you'll find us at Inside the Cylinder.
Search for it, Inside the Cylinder. Glad to give it a plug. Appreciate you coming on with us, and we'll continue to do so. All right, David, so where the hell are we now? I mean, you know, Blake arrived in the trade about a week before the trading deadline, and it looked like, wow, what a shot in the arm, what a lift for the Pistons. Blake and Andre are just a pair made in heaven, and everything is going great guns, and they won four in a row or five in a row, but bam, ever since, you know, well, actually right before the break a couple, and then now after the break, you know, it's a four-game losing streak. And like I said, 14 out of 20, 3.5 games out of the eighth spot in the playoff chase, and it does not look like things are progressing. It looks like things are actually regressing. Or am I being too hard on the Pistons?
No, you're not being too hard. It's actually pretty kind, honestly, to put it so well-mannered. They've looked awful since the All-Star break. They looked awful going into the All-Star break. It kind of seemed like they were one of those teams that desperately needed it, and they did, but that they would, you know, kind of find some time to bounce back, and Stan Van Gundy could, as he said, spend most of his break watching film and trying to find ways to incorporate Blake Griffin a little bit more smoothly into the Pistons, especially on the offensive side of the floor. So, you know, they did drop three in a row since the All-Star break. They did barely squeeze out a win against one of the worst teams in the league, in the Atlanta Hawks, for that last game going into the All-Star break, and now they've, you know, dropped 6 of 7. According to ESPN's BPI, their playoff power index, they have the Pistons at a 12.3% chance to make the playoffs. So things are not looking great.
So, and I asked this before, at what point is there going to be a rebellion? I mean, what has the attendance been like in the new arena? You know, every time we see new arenas being built in the modern age, new arenas or stadiums or ballparks, whatever the case might be, depending on the sport, there is that novelty aspect of things. You draw a lot of crowds, and if you put a successful team out there at the same time, you could do great things, right? What has the attendance been like at Little Caesars, and are the fans growing a little impatient and weary of this constant struggle and these constant, you know, steps back that you're talking about.
Yeah, so on the attendance side, it's a little strange because the attendance capacity has gone up in the new stadium. So they have actually had more people attending, but the percentage has been worse. So they're actually one of the worst teams in the league when it comes to percentage, which is why you see all those empty red seats. You know, that's because there's not a lot of bodies compared to how many people that stadium actually fits. So attendance is not great. You know, I don't want to kind of fluff it and make it seem like it is just because it's up, it might be up a little bit from last season, numbers wise that is.
But are they where they should be? Are they what you would expect in a new building?
No, not at all. And especially, you know, they weren't even doing well when things were going a little bit better. I think Detroit, you know, they're a market that really wants to see the product before they buy in. And, you know, there hasn't been enough of a sustained stretch from this team to actually prove that they are a good basketball team. And you can look back on injuries here and there, and you know, kind of make up some excuses. But at the end of the day, the Pistons are not a 500 basketball team. They haven't really looked like it for the majority of the season, even though they did start off so hot. So, and to your second question about the temperature in the room,
yeah.
I think this is the hottest that I've seen it ever since in Stan Van Gundy's era. I'm seeing, you know, the main editor over at DetroitBadBoys.com. He is, you know, pretty much calling for Stan Van Gundy's position. You know, there's a lot
I've been
of
doing
people.
That. I've been doing that in Toledo for a while, and I've been, you know, I've been at least asking, is it time to start calling for it, if not outright calling for it. So I'm glad to hear that there is more heat in that kitchen up there in Detroit. I'm sorry to interrupt, but I just wanted you to know, down here, not that anybody in Detroit cares, but down here, I've been asking this for quite some time. I do not see the progression. I see regression. And I asked Jim Christensen earlier on, David, about whether or not, you know, 4 years in, this team is ahead of schedule, on schedule, or behind schedule in advancing toward being a championship contending team. And Jim Cushland said it's definitely behind schedule. I agree, and I don't know if that time can be made up. What do you think?
Oh, they're definitely behind schedule. You know, Stan Van Gundy came into the season, or not into the season, but when he was signed to the Detroit Pistons, he set a 5-year window. You know, this is year 4 before the Pistons were supposed to be Eastern Conference contenders. And I don't think he meant contenders for the 8th spot in the playoffs. So he's definitely behind schedule. And, you know, even if you get a healthy Reggie Jackson back next season, and honestly, I'm kind of sick of saying that as like an excuse. You know, it's Stan Van Gundy's also the president of basketball operations and okays everything that the GM does.
Bingo.
So, you know, he didn't, the fact that there's no backup plan to a Reggie Jackson being down and that Ish Smith isn't viable enough as a starting point guard to make this boat keep afloat, then that falls on Stan Van Gundy too. So he doesn't have the benefit of pointing at his GM and saying, hey, these guys haven't got me the players I've wanted, because they're the players that you selected yourself. So
that's what I told Cushman about the Blake trade. You know, he said, well, now that the Blake trade is made, they're going to give him all the time in the world to, you know, including all of next year to make this work, since, you know, it's a new. And I thought, well, he's the one who made it. And he's the one who's made all of the personnel decisions, essentially, or at least greenlit them from the GM. So he is the guy in charge. He's doing the shopping and he's cooking the meal. So he can't complain, I don't have enough time, they have to give me more. He's providing himself the more, or whatever that is. Jim, go ahead.
You know, and try to think about this a little more, David, you know, what their struggles are. And you just brought up the Reggie Jackson thing, and I know it still hurts to not have him there, but it's been, you know, more than a handful of games now. We saw them play well right after Blake was traded, and basically seemingly starting the night where Blake played his old team, the Clippers, at Little Caesars Arena, it's been all downhill. I'm sure there's a bunch of reasons on the court for this. What would you peg as the top one?
Honestly, I think what it comes down to is spacing. You know, this team is having the same issues that they had when they had Greg Monroe, Andre Drummond, and Josh Smith, all guys that couldn't space the floor in the starting lineup. The NBA has matured even more since that season, you know, three seasons ago. You know, now the NBA is even more about pace and space. And they have the same exact issues that they had before. So they have, you know, Stanley Johnson, who cannot shoot in the starting lineup. They have Ish Smith, who cannot shoot in the starting lineup. They have Blake Griffin, who's just below league average, and Andre Drummond, who's just a non-factor from 7 feet plus back. So there's just not enough spacing. And then when the bench comes in and they're not able to provide any type of spacing for the floor, any type of breathing room for Andre Drummond or Blake Griffin to make anything happen on the offensive side. Then you just have what you're seeing right now, which is essentially unwatchable basketball. It's just been poor from a three-point shooting perspective. It's been really poor defending the three-point line. And I think that's where it's all coming down to for this team. And that's what Reggie Jackson would have provided, is some much-needed breathing room if he was able to go, which he isn't. And that's just how things go in the NBA. You're not always expecting to have all your guys all season long.
How long until he is, by the way? I keep seeing stories that say he's making progress, he's getting close. What are we talking close? Are we talking final 10 games of the year? Are we talking next week?
Yeah, so we're talking like roughly like the last 13 games or so. Possibly the earliest that they could see him coming back would be possibly the start of the West Coast road trip, which is March 13th. So I think that's about 10 to 12 games or something left in the season. I guess on a positive note, if the Pistons are still somehow not fully underwater at that point, the schedule does lighten up quite a bit past then. They are really going to be playing some of the worst teams in the league who are going to be fully tanking if they're not already. Not that the Pistons have really been world beaters when they play against the worser teams in the league, but I think you're really going to start to see kind of that shameful level of tanking that the NBA has tried to stop come that last, 3 weeks or so of the season. So, so I think March 13th would be possibly like the earliest that you would see Reggie Jackson back.
Which is certainly not in time then. So is your prediction now with 20 games, I don't know exactly how many, it's around 20 games to go. Is your prediction right now they will not make the playoffs?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say that so defiantly if there was hope, which is what you see on the floor, right? Like if the Pistons are losing games, but they're really competitive, or they're the rhythm of the offense looks like it's somewhat sustainable, or it looks like just a relatively respectable piece of this Pistons just in totality, then I would say, yeah, they might have a shot, but being three games back right now, there are 22 games remaining. I just haven't seen anything when it comes to product on the floor that makes me think that they're going to be able to make up the amount of space that they need to in order to catch the Miami Heat.
Last question, kind of goofy, because LeBron James is still active, but is there a better player on the planet right now, today, just today, than Anthony Davis?
Wait, so so am I accepting LeBron James or am I not accepting LeBron?
No, I'm saying he is included. He's widely called the best player on the planet. But based on today, right now, looking at the National Basketball Association, if you had to point to one person and say, that's the best player on the planet today, right now, is it Anthony Davis?
It's LeBron James.
Still LeBron James.
It will be very hard
Speak
for that.
Speak to that, because Anthony Davis is doing some crazy historic things. He's put up now four 40-point nights in the month of February. First time anybody has done that in one calendar month in 35 years. And as you know, the 53-18-5 is the only second person ever to do that since they started counting blocks. He's just putting up 40- and 15-night games like they're free, man. Like, it's too easy for him right now to do these crazy things, and that's... I'm just wondering, if he is pushing into that question of, because people say LeBron, as you just did, they say Durant, people have said the Freak might be the guy to take that mantle eventually. I feel like Anthony Davis is right there with those guys. Where is he?
He's right there. I mean, one thing I would say, and I know this was a few years ago, but I don't think LeBron has really lost a beat at all since we've seen him become this sort of MVP-level player over the past, 12+ years, pretty much since his sixth sophomore season. When the Cavaliers made it to the finals and he was